He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys. What did you see?
Oh, I was at Watkins Glen over this past weekend for the IMSA race, and there were a lot of car displays.
Did you have fun?
It was work, but it was fun. It was interesting.
Were people simulating?
A lot of display vendors, what we call display vendors, you know, car manufacturers, had game-ish simulators on their booths. In their booths, Cadillac.
Game-ish. It's a new word for the listeners. Because Jay has a professional simulator.
There were a bunch of simulators, yes. Yeah, and I had mine in the middle of all that.
But what the game-ish, and that's a...
You see the game ones at the car shows, too, where yeah. And the lines that go around the block. And I never have been able to get in a line to be able to get in one, but
people will do that. They'll line up for hours to do
something.
Like
going to Disney World and trying to get on the most favorite ride and having to wait 3 hours to get in.
But
Disney is pretty good at making waiting in line interesting. An experience in itself.
Right. These are not. What I'm trying to figure out is, wouldn't it be more compelling if you were going to wait in line for something that gave you an actual that was Rush. Less gamey?
They don't know that.
But you know, it's like everything else in life. Nothing is free, right? And I bring my simulator there and we charge a small fee to have a 15-minute experience, and we do this at Lime Rock too for certain public events there. But it's all about the hardware, it's all about the software, and you know, the objective is different. And yes, those more basic simulators are fine for entertaining kids and just entertainment.
Right.
That's it.
And that's what
they're... But you're not, it remains a game as opposed to a driving training tool.
Enhancement or
yes,
something like that.
Right, exactly.
Okay, let's move to new product. And we can come back to that at the end if you'd like.
Yeah,
but I want to talk about new products that are out online for those listeners who might be in for great big machines for family hauling. The Hyundai Kia group is out with the Telluride for Kia and the Palisade for the Hyundai side of the equation. And both are three-row, large crossover capable type of vehicles. They're consistent with the X4 Expeditions and the GM C Denalis. Not Denali. Those are brand models within the range. What is the GM? The Chevrolet Suburban. The Suburban.
They're more in the size of the Ford Explorer, the VW Atlas.
Oh, you think they're more that size?
Yes. Okay. They look bigger. The Telluride looks actually
the biggest issue
good.
For the American manufacturers good. With the competition of these is going to be the pricing differential with the features that are going to be contained in the Asian brands versus what you have to pay for to get probably the similar same line of features on the American brands. And this has been ongoing since Hyundai and Kia came online with their vehicles a couple of decades ago. But they still are able to undercut the pricing and load the vehicles up with features, with the resulting list prices being quite different from the list prices for the equivalently equipped American versions of the same vehicles, the Explorers and the others, the Durangos. But they look great. We don't talk too much about excitement of style, but Jay, who it takes a lot to get Jay all revved up about something, and he's admittedly quite revved up about the Kia Telluride, and which
I find interesting that everybody knows about the Kia Telluride, and you had to look up just now while we sat down the name of the Hyundai.
That's because the Telluride's on the lot, and the Hyundais are going to be available in late August, September, and I've been trying to catch up to that.
The Telluride has been the big thing, and the thing that the automotive
world
news industry has been following and waiting for. And it is. It's very good looking. It's well equipped, around $45,000. It's well executed, does everything well. It's made in America, for whoever that matters to.
Well, it's going to matter with the tariff situation, for
and,
sure.
but, it, you know, it's another vehicle that's getting like 20 miles to the gallon.
Question, how much is it more or less versus an equivalent?
Explorer?
Yeah, how much is the...
I would guess you're within $7,000 to $8,000 differential, maybe between the equivalently equipped Explorer and the Telluride / Palisade group of cars. Until you go look at stickers, you won't know. Until you make the deal, you won't know either.
I don't really know. I haven't looked at mid-size SUVs, but what I find interesting is that it's not going to be a lot more money than a well-equipped smaller SUV.
Right.
So if you have a need for a bigger one, this is the way. I mean, it is going to be a very viable way to go. And there we have another SUV on the market.
Right.
Yes.
If you have a brain and if you have any sense of history whatsoever, you will know that there are cycles, and we are just in one of those cycles where those people who were very happy to, you know, now have kids and spawn and dogs and groceries and things.
And speaking of the cycles, we also have this word saturation. And how many SUVs can you have before you've got the market saturated, which actually doesn't become saturated until there's nobody else to buy any of them because everybody's got
it's
one.
Cycles.
Let me go back to – circle back to Watkins Glen.
Okay.
And not something that I would like to
up.
Talk about. No, well, yes, if you want. But the people who came – the fans, okay – most of those racing fans come for a three-day weekend. So you look at what they drive, and it's always interesting. And a lot of campers, a lot of huge campers, and a lot of them need either a Suburban or an Expedition or a pickup truck to tow them. And a lot of them are fifth-wheelers. So you actually need a pickup truck with a bed. When you see that, and this is summer, and you see on the roads the number of campers out there, you go, okay, I guess there is a reason to have your pickup truck as a recreational vehicle. And it makes sense. I mean, I get it. On the other hand, I also saw a boatload of Lamborghinis for some reason, and including one that some guy from Quebec was driving as a daily driver. And he had a Thule box on the roof of his Lamborghini and was driving it all weekend. I thought it was absolutely great. So you can get around in a sports car, go camping, put all your stuff in
Thule,
a roof rack.
Right. That's correct. The Thule's, that's the brand I know the best. There are other brands, but the Thule's are ubiquitous almost on vehicles that are used for summer fun.
Long time ago, a guy.
In the wintertime, they carry ski equipment galore, snowboards and the like, all encased in plastic so that you don't get slush and snow and sleet and grime on top like you do with the open racks. But they are wonderful vehicles and wonderful additions to cars or trucks. And to have it on a Lamborghini is quite amusing. And I'm glad it's a daily driver. I agree with you, Jay. I think if you're going to buy these cars, I know people buy them and put them in the garage and put, 100 miles a year on them or something, but thinking they're going to go up in value, and maybe they will. But, boy, if you're going to buy a car like that and you really like to drive, I would be driving it too probably, as would you, Jay, I think even.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But back to saturation and market situations. Jay mentioned, and maybe I did too, a few shows ago, that we're going to see a peak in the SUV sales situation and the pickup truck situation. And I saw an ad. You know, we talk in the fall about pickup truck incentives ranging from anywhere from $10,000 to $12,000 or $14,000 or 20% or this or 15%. Here we are in the middle of just about the beginning of July, and a Dodge Ram ad ran on the soccer channel, and I was watching soccer, and I think it was 20% off sticker. I don't think it was $20,000 off. No, it was 20% off sticker. That's the highest percentage off of a sticker I've seen in the pickup truck ads that I can recall in.
Did it say this specific truck?
No, it actually said for, and it was broadly suggestive that it would be available for several of the models in what that were in stock on dealerships' lots. In stock means that somebody's paying. Planning.
Was that for the new model or the
It was for the new model.
Okay.
Well, it was for several models, so I can't tell you it was just for the older versions of the new model.
And he didn't have time to get his magnifying glass and run it up the screen.
FCA, I certainly did not.
FCA, Fiat Chrysler, has a thing for putting out new vehicles and then producing the old vehicle for some time long.
And I drove a Ram 1500 Classic. I think I mentioned it a few shows ago. I had it for a loaner. And I actually enjoyed the simplicity of it. It had the Bluetooth. It had a rear camera. It had capability for navigation, satellite radio. And it had to be, it was all-wheel drive, and it had a Hemi engine in it. It was automatic. And I think it was, I didn't see the sticker on. I looked in the glove compartment, but the label wasn't there. But it certainly was down near $40,000 instead of up near $60,000.
I think you need to get a truck because you keep talking about those pickup trucks.
I don't need to get a truck.
Do you know what I think? It's just so comical that with some regularity, we are told, yes, here, have a little teeny tiny car because you're all going to drive these teeny tiny cars. And then you go out into the actual non-manufactured world, and you've got your campers to schlep, and you've got
you bring up teeny tiny cars, and teeny tiny cars are on their way out, and Mini is now in a slippery slope of declining sales. I thought they sold many more than 65,000 cars, which was apparently a year in the U.S., which is apparently their best year since it was introduced back in 2002. I thought they were higher than that, but now they're heading down towards 30,000 cars. And we talked about the Smart 4.2, which is disappearing from the market. I think it's disappeared from being imported. I don't think it's coming in anymore. The Fiat is on the ropes. The Fiat 500.
I think it's a marketing thing. A lot of it, I agree with you. The automotive world.
Well,
if you have a niche vehicle.
It's product, a niche
like
market.
Like the Mini was.
But the Mini, before they started maximizing it,
right.
was
and
absolutely
Once you start maximizing
fun.
What is supposed to be a Mini,
there's
no longer a Mini, and then
there's a headline
you've diluted
coming
the brand.
Out.
And talk about
that maximizing. We talk about these cars. The manufacturers bring out a car at a certain size level, and then all of a sudden, 2 years later, they start stretching it.
Yeah.
And then they stretch it and bring it up to the next level that the older series of the next level for this level was already in production. But Mini is now trying to deal with itself because they are on a slide, and there are a lot of people, I'm right there with them, that they've outgrown themselves because when is a Mini not a Mini? Well, the new Minis are not really Mini when you look at the Countrymans and the stretch
versions.
But
whoever, I have to just, this is me, my personal opinion, I'm sorry.
You have one, that's all right.
Whenever
we all do.
You're sitting in a meeting and you take your brand, which works, and you say, okay, now we're going to change it because people can't fit in it.
But let's hold on. In some cases, it works. I mean, if you take a company like Porsche, which was struggling to manufacture and be profitable, making a limited number of sports cars, which was one model, 911. And in the early 2000s, they started making Cayennes and selling them, and people said it was crazy. But you know what? Without the Cayenne, we would not have the 911s today.
Excuse me. If somebody if I were in that Porsche marketing meeting and they said, we're going to do a Cayenne, which is, as far as I'm concerned, still one of the best-looking SUVs mm-hmm. out there, I wouldn't say what I'm saying. I'm talking about if I'm sitting in the Mini meeting. It's called a Mini. And everyone is sitting there saying, okay, so we need to sell more Minis, and the way we're going to do this is to make it a bigger car. I would have an issue with that.
Well, they were reacting to the consumer's complaints that wanted to have a Mini,
it was
too small. And, you know, my attitude is...
I think it's greed. It's greed.
It's greed for money.
And I just read something this morning about Aston Martin making a pledge of sorts and saying, yes, they're going to come out with, I think, a crossover, but they are going to limit production. And the idea is, to keep it very exclusive. and not dilute the brand. That's marketing 101. You dilute the brand, and now you're competing with mass market products.
It's already exclusive due to its price, however. So I don't know what exclusive on upon exclusive is going to be.
Even more expensive. But that's all right, because there are people out there with so much money that they can.
Now look at the Bugattis, for example, and they've got a super ultra super Bugatti. I think they build 10 of them, and they're $2.5 million each, or something like that. That's how you keep it exclusive. And the Ford, I think, was going to limit the production of the GT, right, Jay?
But they not only limited the production, they made it
stopped.
There was an application process to buy one. I mean, you can't just show up with $500,000 and say, I want a Ford GT. You have to apply and all of
adhere to
do
certain
a background check. I'm serious.
And resale restrictions. And it was tested by a guy who bought one and tried to go and resell it and did resell it. And Ford went after him and I don't know what the final settlement was. But
it was contentious for sure.
It was contentious for sure. Exactly. So,
Again, anyone who's on the Bugatti truck wars. I just want to say, anyone who's on the Bugatti waiting list or the Ford GT waiting list, we have a small NPR station here that needs support.
Oh, okay. There's probably nobody in this corner that is on the wait list. But if you are out there and you're on the wait list, we just heard a solicitation for a donation.
Tri-State Public Communications, Robin Hood Radio, and you will continue to hear car keys regularly.
Okay.
Carry on.
Good. Okay, carry on. Back to the pickup truck wars. There is a big war developing in the second and third level of pickups. Ford is still right up on top of the heap numerically, but Dodge, the Ram, and Chevrolet are going to battle it out through the end of this year. Dodge has been on a run. I think it's up to 8 months or something that they've outsold the Chevrolet Silverado level. I don't think both the GMC and the Silverado, but the Silverado line of pickup trucks, and Chevy's redesigned them all for the coming year, and they're going to do a battle that will be interesting for the pickup truck owners to watch, if they even care. I see an awful lot of new Silverados running around our northwest broadcast corner, more so than I think I see the Rams. So I think Silverado may be winning the local area numerical war on that. Jay is shaking his head in dissent, which Jay likes to do. But he doesn't count pickups. I sort of do.
The show's called Car Keys. Car.
Car.
Yeah, well, we talked about Sims a little while ago. That had nothing to do with cars.
Listen, I'm interjecting again, and I just would like to say that I'm seeing Rams. So, and I don't know if that's just because I'm driving in a different patch of road. But
you are, actually.
Right. We need to find you a new wagon.
Work on it.
Let's talk about recalls for a moment. They've been blessedly simple and
hold on. Can I just mention, seriously, it's an absolutely gorgeous wagon. The new Bentley wagon is absolutely drop-dead gorgeous.
You heard her just solicit. She's soliciting donations for the radio station. I don't think she's going to go and buy a Bentley.
No.
Well, maybe she could. I mean, if all those guys show up with
their Bugatti money.
Oh, yeah. That'll do the
Bugatti money will buy you a nice Bentley wagon.
That's what I would like. I would like a beautiful. I'm good.
Okay.
I'd like that. After we do the station. All right, back to, what is it, trucks?
Jay, you have to, I was just going to, now we finished the truck situation, except that the sales in these vehicles may be hitting a peak right now, even though gas is still relatively cheap. In the geopolitical world of oil and oil pricing, it's not fixed. What?
I said, which isn't controlled at all. That's what I meant by fixed. I don't mean mended.
Well, it's not controlled by use of oil, that's for sure, in terms of prices and all that, because we all know that there's theoretically a glut of oil out there.
I'll tell you what, when you're running Route 23 in the middle of the night, the price of fuel starts not to matter all that much. It's fuel versus no fuel.
That's correct.
And fuel at any price is better than no fuel.
And wherever you are, it is so funny because you have this. No, this is a perfect example. It's always been there for all to see. You come off 684 going north, and the first and there's a gas station.
Oh, that
you
shell.
Don't know where you're exactly. Yeah. But if you don't know where you are, oh my gosh, Oasis.
$3.39 for regular.
Let me ask you a question. If you get to a strip of, you know, civilization, and you see the first gas station, and you say, okay, the next one's going to be cheaper, and you go on to the next
one. Depends on whether or not you're in
New
Jersey.
And then you're going, no, and you're driving, okay? But now you're getting to the end of that strip, whether you're getting out of town again, and the last gas station, now the prices start going up.
Yes, of course they do.
Right. And you haven't yet stopped for gas. Are you turning around for the cheaper gas, or are you stopping at the last one?
Of course you're stopping at the last one, but I have one word for you.
I might turn around if it's only a mile away.
I have one word for you. It's my favorite place on the planet. Not Sloatsburg.
Excuse me?
Sloatsburg.
Is that on a map?
Yeah.
Yes, it is, actually. I have been to Sloatsburg.
And it's where the thruway. Anyway, Sloatsburg is a place that has
cheap gas.
Not when you get to the end.
Okay. I mean,
you
and
know.
And not when you're turning around.
This is a personal experience.
I don't have my phone here, so I can't Google map it.
You'll find it.
Okay.
Just because the name is memorable.
It sure is.
Yep. Like Otisburg, only better.
So can I come back to Watkins Glen for a second?
Sure.
And
we're almost in your safety zone.
We're
in the safety
zone.
We're in your
part of the safety zone, actually.
Okay. Well, car racing
Go
is
to
a
Watkins
great,
Glen.
Great lesson for safety.
Okay.
It's a great racetrack. It was great. IMSA racing is I think, fabulous racing. A lot of sports cars. The series will be coming to Lime Rock in 3 weeks. And
does everyone know what IMSA is?
International Motorsports Association. It's one of the sanctioning bodies in motorsports and the predominant professional, the sanctioning body for professional endurance racing in America. They're an American series. But all the cars that run, they have different classes, and unfortunately, not all of them are coming to Lime Rock because you need 3 days of racing to get the whole series to come and run there. If you only have 2 days of racing because you can't race on the third day of the weekend, you're limited in the number of cars you can bring. That opens a whole other debate, and we'll not get into that. But the sports car fields are just absolutely great to watch. I mean, Porsches, Lamborghinis, Ferraris, BMWs, those are $500,000 or $750,000 pieces of machinery that are originally somewhat related to street sports cars. But they're worth seeing. And they are faster than Formula Ones were 40 years ago. I mean, it's pretty incredible. And the scary part is they actually make no more horsepower than their street versions of the car. That's the scary part. Is some people have those cars and are, you know, riding with that kind of horsepower on the roads. But that's all another story.
So in terms of safety zone, is there anything you wanted to say? I will say that for people who are bringing their wonderful cars into Lime Rock, not in a truck, which I think are fascinating. I think those trucks are great because they're just out of this world. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, look.
Okay.
What
started to say you're bringing their cars into Lime Rock, and then you got sidetracked.
Well, they bring on race transporters on
yeah, those race transporters are absolutely amazing. I'm talking about people who are actually driving and get all excited because they're coming over a hill and forget that there are
chickens. This is a safety note. Yes, I agree with Jill. And they're coming in on White Hollow Road, which is
and you're just like, okay, I'm getting closer to the track, and my GPS is saying it. And all it's just this one last bit, and you go flying over that hill. And
a little security tidbit here. I drove back from Watkins Glen during the night last night. We left in the evening, and so driving most of the night, towing a 6,000-pound trailer. Nice roads. We did the road going up in daytime. It's a beautiful
route. 23, was it?
Route 23, and then a little bit of 88, and then Route 79 in the Finger Lakes region. It's just fun to drive. But even though you have 55 mile-an-hour speed limits on all those two-lane roads in New York, at night, you do want to be careful. There are a lot of deer out there at this season. And I just want to remind people, if you see one deer, there are probably others. If you see one that just crossed the road,
if there's one,
keep your
there's
foot
two.
On the brakes.
If there's two, there's three.
Exactly.
This is just, you have to.
Yeah, because you don't know whether that deer is the first or the last of, right. of whatever
exactly
is going to go
and
across.
That's my little tidbit. So keep your eyes peeled. Keep those eyes moving to the side of the road, way ahead.
Have your high beams on when you can, and you're not blinding somebody coming the other way, because the high beams, especially in the new cars, are very effective at throwing a very good light way down a straight part of any road and into the curves on the curvy roads.
And if it's daytime, just kind of assume that somebody might be living there on that.
Well, the only other safety bit I want to get in with our last few seconds is that there's a lot of road construction going on, and these road control police don't have a clue that they're invisible in the shadows of their work areas. And they have their stop signs, and half of them have their cell phone in one hand, and they're holding the stop slow sign in the other, and they aren't even looking at what's coming both ways.
Okay, enough with the rant.
Well, I just wanted to beat you to it.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarc, and this is Car Keys.